right, and I am here with Barry Broom, CEO of Greater Sacramento. He's one of my favorite guests. You've been on the show once or twice, Barry. How you doing today?
Doing fantastic.
Now, most of Sacramento knows you, but let's help the rest of Sacramento get to know Barry Broom. Who are you? Where did you come from, young man?
Well, you know, I'm an Ohio guy, Ohio native, and, you know, grew up blue collar. And, of course, you know, Ohio's economy, like all those Midwesterners' economy, went in the wrong direction hard.
Okay.
And, you know, it was something that I wanted to change in my life. So when I got out of college, I worked corporately a few years, but went to work in the inner city in Cleveland. So I spent most of my life in Cleveland and, you know, started trying to work on solutions for communities. And, you know, it's what I've done with my life. It's what I've done the last 30 years.
Well, you've always struck me as one of these guys that has this incredible toughness, right? I know you're a wrestler. You were highly successful there. But working on the streets there in Cleveland, I mean, what's toughened you up the most in your life? Was it one of those two experiences or something different?
I think it was my upbringing. You know, my dad was a World War II Marine, you know, and they, you know, depression parents. And both my mom and my dad's family were in orphanages. You know, just from poverty, you know, I knew my grandparents didn't die, you know, they just couldn't take care of them. And that was, you know, people forget in the 30s, you know, how tough it was. So, you know, when I was a kid, you know, my dad didn't believe in doctors. So
okay.
If you goofed around in the backyard and broke your arm, you didn't say anything about it.
Wow.
Because he was going to set it. So I was about 6 years old and I broke my hand wrestling around with my brother. And I was like keeping it in my pocket because I didn't want my old man to see my hand broken. Because when he found it, he was like, oh, I think that's broken. I said, no, it's okay. And he was like, no, it's broken. So he had to take me out back in the shop and put my hand in a...
Reset your hand.
Yeah,
your dad played Dr. Dr. Broom.
Yeah, my dad gave me a shot of Jim Beam and 2 aspirin and set my hand when I was about 7 years old.
Okay.
And but what was cool about it was, you know, he did little odd side jobs, and one of the things he could do was work on Corvettes. So he had some fiberglass. And so while I was, you know, howling and moaning and groaning, he made a fiberglass cast for me, and then he had it painted a candy apple red.
Wow.
And he put the Corvette emblem on my forearm.
Oh, the coolest cast in town.
Yeah, so I had a Corvette
cast. I'd rather have that than one of that white one from the doctor that everybody writes on.
Yeah, so whenever we got hurt, my dad would be like, those doctors can't do anything for you that I can't do.
All right, well, let's transfer. Okay, that toughness. You know, you always know it comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
But think about translating that now into Sacramento, right? You had this economic development success story. You emerge on the Sacramento scene, 4 years ago or so?
Yeah, 3.5.
3.5, 4 years ago. And that toughness, how have you used that toughness to build something special here at GSAC in Sacramento?
Yeah, well, it's been all mental toughness.
Okay.
Right? So I don't tell them. I'll give you some stuff I haven't ever told anyone, right? So I got brought into the community by Kevin Johnson, Linda Katehi, Alex Gonzalez from Sac State, Pat Fry, Rob Lynch, and Dave Lucchetti. Those were the guys that brought me here. My first month, I had one meeting with Pat Fry, and he retired as the president of Sutter. So he was going to be the lead corporate partner for me. Then at the end of my first month, I went and had lunch with Alex Gonzalez, and he said, I'm going to be retiring
and
stepping
down
from
Sac State.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. And so 2 months later, Rob Lynch was my chair, and he told me, I'm going to be retiring as the president and CEO of VSP. And then, of course, you know, within about 6 months after that, Chancellor Katehi, you know, ran into some complicated political situations. And then, you know, Kevin Johnson announced he was not going to run for re-election for mayor.
So how you're thinking Dave Lucchetti is he's still
Lucchetti's
there, right?
Like
Lucchetti,
alive.
Like,
yeah,
he doesn't leave. He's implanted.
But I will say, I think, first of all, I will say this. It's a compliment to the community because no one knew me from Adam. You know, the kind of validation was Rob and Alex Gonzalez and Linda and Kevin and Pat Fry. Like, you're going to love this guy. And really, the people who brought me here were all gone within my first 12 months.
Well, you are one of those guys that doesn't go unnoticed, right?
Yeah.
You get known pretty quick.
Yeah.
Talk to us about winning everybody over.
Yeah.
First thing you got to do is get their attention, am I right?
Right, yeah. So the first thing I did, and this is what saved me and saved Greater Sacramento, and I'm going to give Anna Strauss, you know, who's an entrepreneur now. I'm chairing one of her organizations, so she's
awesome.
Still a good friend. Sherry Little, who's at CalPERS. Yeah. And Vanessa Young, who's at SMUD, you know, I had three SACTO people stay and help me. Everybody else moved on and found successful careers. And I told them, I'm like, look, we got 4 to 6 months to launch this thing. If we don't launch it correctly, it's going to fail. And if we launch it correctly, it'll succeed. And we're going to know in 4 to 6 months, but no one else is going to know. And so the first 6 months I was in this job, I mean, we did 14 hours a day. And I went from 10 CEOs to 27 CEOs in 15 communities in 4 months. So started in February with 10 CEOs. By June, I had 25 CEOs and I had 15 communities. And once that launch rolled out the right way, then all of a sudden, you know, and I had multi-year commitments, then people knew, okay, well, this guy isn't going to go away overnight. And then it allowed me to transition through those leadership changes. And then, of course, you know, we ran hard and turned the corner fast and we hit the corners fast. And pace is the most important thing when you launch an organization. So there were two things that I did with my team. I put a sign on the wall, very Machiavellian, that was money, power, deals.
Money, power, deals.
Right. So when you're new, everybody wants to meet you, right? And so what a lot of people do when they're new is they waste it because they get to know people, right? So they waste their newness by settling in. So I didn't settle in. To be honest with you, I'm just starting to settle in now. And so instead of settling in and getting to know people and doing a warm-up act, you know, I did a, you know.
Don't waste your newness by settling in.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I went and just rattled everybody's cages and went 100 miles an hour. And I didn't settle in. I did the opposite, right? I took a lot of risks. And I think and on the money power deal standpoint is, you know, we're a very nice community. We love soft skills. And people kept getting on my calendar who just wanted to get to know me. But they weren't a source of money, they weren't a source of organizational power, and they weren't a deal. So I put a sign up on the wall, money, power, deals. In order to get on my calendar in the first year and a half, you either had to be an investor, you had to deliver some type of power to the organization, like maybe you were the president of the Senate or the Speaker of the House, or you had to be a deal. And you'd be surprised how efficient you are if you get really stringent on where you spend time and how you spend it. And so, you know, I raised $17 million in private money in 6 months.
Wow.
In the job.
Wow.
And then, you know, and then as those leadership transitions came, the irony, it flipped, right? So I welcomed Gary May to Sacramento, and I welcomed Robert Nelson to Sacramento, and I oriented Daryl Steinberg to a regional economic model when those three institutions founded the organization, and they were the reason I came here. But within a year, I became the face of the institution and was bringing people in, and the other thing I always say is when you decide you're going to be a leader and you raise your hand to be a leader, you may not know what the call of duty looks like. So I had no intentions of coming here and being the face of the organization. I always thought that would be KJ, Linda Katehi. You know, I was going to stay more in the background and build the institution for them and give them the infrastructure to change the community. What happened was they had all left in my first year. And so all of a sudden I became
You look around and I guess it's me,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, right, yeah. So I said, you know, we had the old joke, you know, of whoever wants to volunteer forward, step forward, and everybody stepped back and you're still standing there.
Yeah.
So that was, I don't tell people that, but, you know, that was a really tough period and it took a lot of mental toughness. And what I do from a mental toughness standpoint, and, you know, get that from my upbringing and my family, I also get it from wrestling, is, you know, the intense drilling practices of a wrestler, right? So I did 200 stand-ups. At the end of practice, from age 8 to 23 years of old, I did 200 stand-ups.
What's a stand-up?
Stand-up is a move on bottom. It's a simple, basic move where you pop your hips up,
all right,
get to your feet, and turn loose and face your opponent. There's a lot of ways to escape.
Yep.
But if you're from the Midwest, you do all power wrestling, so you do stand-ups. So my brother, when I was 8, and my brother-in-law, when I was a kid, used to make me do 200 stand-ups a day. So I'm going to tell you how important this is, right? So I did 200 stand-ups a day, and I did it my whole life. And I went into the state tournament my senior year, and my high school wrestling coach says, you need a different move than a stand-up. And I said, no, I don't. I said, no one can stop it.
That's my signature escape move.
Yeah, that's like telling Jordan you can't go baseline, right? I wasn't Jordan. But I said, no, I'm not going to do it. So my coach said, I want you to pick another move on bottom, and I want you to do it 10 times after practice before you do the 200 stand-ups. And I used to complain like crazy about these 10 moves. It was called a sit out.
Oh, yeah.
Turn in Cazzoni, where you grab the head. So I was in the state finals. And unlike a lot of people going into the state finals, I was not worried that I was going to get beat. I was worried I wasn't going to be on television. You know, I had a whole different attitude.
A man with confidence.
You know, I had a lot of confidence. So I go out in this match, and, you know, like I'm looking in the stands for my friends because I'm going to smoke this guy in the finals, right? Because I had a really hot tournament. So I go out, and I take this guy down right off the bat, real confident, and I kick him out. And I got a little sloppy because I started getting cocky, and he threw me to my back. Ooh. On a shot. So I crawled off the mat. I'm down 5-2, and I'm thinking, okay, it's the first period. No big deal. You know, I got a minute left. I'm going to pop this stand-up out, the unstoppable stand-up that I've been doing 200 times a day since I've been 8 years old.
Yes.
And then I'm going to get back on my feet. I'll be down 5-3. I'll take the guy down. I won't get sloppy again. I have, you know, a little too cocky here. Let's just win the match now, not become, you know, a television star. So this kid's arms was about the size of my leg. And oh. I'd do a stand-up, and he'd pick me up, touch my head on the top of the rafters, and slam me to the mat. And I would do a stand-up, and he slammed me four, five, six. Yeah, I could not get away from it, right? So now I go out of bounds, and now I'm panicking because now I can't get out. So I'm down 5-2, and I can't get out. I'm walking back to the mat, and there's 11 seconds left, and I'm thinking, maybe I should try this Cazzoni.
Sit out,
turn in Cazzoni. I never hit it in a match in my life. And I hit it for a 5-point move with 11 seconds
left.
Wow. Yeah. So it's a cool story about meticulous details, right?
Yes.
But then at the same time, having some contingency plan if your meticulous details don't work.
Great lessons here. Yeah. We're talking about like allocating our resources, be concise in the way we utilize our time. As a new guy, I think it's for any entrepreneur, that's always important, but also having a contingency plan. Well, you know, a lot of guys think wrestling's an individual sport. When you start talking about what you're doing here in the Sacramento region, this is not an individual sport. You've got this board of directors, some of the highest powered players in the region from a business standpoint, and then you also have an internal team. So I'm wondering, how do you bring those two teams individually together, and then how do you get them to work alongside one another?
Yeah, well, that goes back to dedication, right? So like money, power, deals, the other one is dedication and preparation.
Okay.
Right? So you got to meet Daniel Casey, my new executive vice president.
Yes, awesome.
Razor sharp, right? So, you know, the goal is who beats who to the office. So, you know, I get up at 4 a.m, I read my emails, I go to yoga, and I'm ready to go by 7. And so one of the things you got to be is an early riser. And I've done a lot of research on this. And, you know, when you work late like we do, a lot of times you sleep in and get rolling at 9 because maybe you've been at your office till midnight. I would recommend people not do that.
Right. Sleep is somewhat healthy for you, right?
Well, sleep's important, but an early regimen's important because your brain is at its peak between like 6 a.m. and 10 a.m. And so that's when you want to make your most complex decisions, in the morning. Because by 3, 4, 5, you've pitched 100 people, you're tired, you've had lunch, you know, you're at the end of your day. So I think, you know, I'm a big believer in preparation and dedication. So I will tell you, no one will out-prepare me, and no one will out-dedicate me, and no one will do that with Daniel Casey. So a big part of the culture when you're a leader is you got to set the standard. And if you're rolling in at 9, well, your young professionals are going to roll in at 9:30. But if your team rolls in at 9 and your leadership's been at their desk since 7 o'clock, you start to set the tone for the intensity of the work environment, but at the same time, make it fun, right? So I think I think you got to lead by example, because between 40 board members, 19 communities, 19 economic development directors, you know, a team of about 15 people, a lot of eyes on me, you know, it's really about a standard of how you set on how you operate and lead, because you really can't manage, you know, individually that kind of network. So you set culture, you set standards, you set pace. And then, you know, you go from there.
Who gets there first, you or Danielle?
Danielle's been getting there first, but she's new, that's why. And she's young.
Yes. But, yeah. I love it. Okay, so let's talk about your board, right? These are the high-powered players in town. Mm-hmm. Do they work together well? I mean, how do you guys all get along?
That's really important, right? Because here's the thing, too. I'm gonna out a lot of stuff. I introduced these CEOs to each other. So think about that. think about having the CEO of McClatchy meet the CEO of Raley's on this board.
Yeah.
And think about how important McClatchy and Raley's have been as an institution in this community.
For sure.
So it speaks to one of the civic breakdowns that I see in California. So if you're one of the CEOs in Chicago, you know all the CEOs in Chicago, and you've known them forever. If you're one of the CEOs in Phoenix, they all know each other. But here in Sacramento, the CEOs didn't know each other at all because they weren't engaged in the community. So a big part of it was, you know, getting these CEOs to become an informal network of friends and leaders themselves, and that's what's starting to happen in the organization. Because the breakdown of that occurs like this. Who's the MLS deal? Oh, that's Kevin Nagel's deal. Well, that's the community's deal. Kevin's just on the point. You know, we're working with bringing in higher education in Placer County. Whose deal is that? Oh, that's AKT deals. That's Angelo Sakopoulos' deal. Right. That's Kiriakos' deal.
Yeah.
And I've been a big fan. Hey, that is the community's deal. And I certainly expect the CEOs of the region to back the Placer County Higher Education Initiative. And the CEOs of the region need to back MLS.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, and the CEOs of the region need to back Daryl Steinberg and need to back Gary, right? So now what you end up creating is the organization becomes a leadership service model for a mayor and a university president, because when they step into something, they snap their fingers and 40 CEOs show up.
Yeah.
And that's very
powerful.
Thinking
about that, we all care about our hometown. I'm trying to demonstrate that by having an entrepreneurial radio show, because I think entrepreneurs are key. But thinking about, you're introducing these people who don't really know one another. It starts with just getting to know each other when you're building a team. But I imagine there's got to be issues, right? Challenges in getting these opposing opposing mindsets to work together.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you get them thinking one goal?
Well, first off, use evidence, right? So the big we drive data a lot. I mean, as you know, when I talk about UC Davis, I have a command of the data. So when people talk about UC Davis and Aggie Square, is that for the city of Sacramento or for the region? Well, when you look at the region's economic health, we've not been able to capture our college graduates, and it's one of the real vulnerabilities.
They're moving away.
Yeah, they're moving away. So if Aggie Square starts capturing college graduates and starts to familiarize UC Davis with the community, the students themselves, now the students want to live here. So when employers come in and talk to the students and they say, where would you like to live? UC Davis students are now starting to say, well, you know, I'd like to live in the Sacramento area, where 10 years ago was, I'm going to live in San Francisco, LA, Seattle, or Austin. So understanding how these things create value across agendas and politics is really important. And we use evidence and data on that.
Well, I wonder about, you know, we only have a minute or two left, but I'm wondering about Barry Broom's time. You're obviously very concise. You're data-driven. You've got things thought through. But, I mean, a big piece of economic growth is recruitment. And there's another side that has to do with retention. Mm-hmm. How do you divide those two timelines or the two time constraints?
Yeah, well, first off, it's really important to understand what will change the economy, right? So we start with a competitiveness agenda, right? So, you know, John Jackson from William Jessup.
You bet.
You know, Willie from Sierra College.
Duncan.
Will and Dunkey. Those two guys lead our competitiveness agenda. So we take evidence and analytics, and then basically we look at, you know, where should we be appropriating money, time, and energy as a region to strengthen our market position? And I put a lot of energy into bringing that kind of thinking into local activities and policies, right? So we knew, for instance, we're almost last in the United States at capturing college graduates. We also know we're not capturing UC Davis commercial activity. We also know that UC Davis tends to sit over the causeway and not be engaged in the urban core. So Aggie Square solves all those problems. So it gets looked at as maybe it's an urban campus. What is it? Is it a medical school thing? Mm-hmm. But it's really a solution to huge competitiveness deficiencies. And so when you can demonstrate that from an evidence standpoint, that's really important. Now, Aggie Square will lead to spinouts. Aggie Square will lead to expansion.
Yeah.
Aggie Square will lead to attraction. Yeah. And Aggie Square will increase our competitiveness.
Kind of does all of it, huh?
Yeah, it does all of it. So I try to find these big institutional plays that allow it to do this. Like MLS, I'm a huge champion of MLS. What will MLS do? What is the number one sport for millennials? It's soccer. It's not football.
Yeah.
So MLS gives us an appeal to the 18 to 34-year-old educated people, which is the most important part of your workforce to beef up, which will also lead to capturing UC Davis graduates and Sac State graduates. But also San Francisco does not have an MLS team. So I think we could be the San Francisco Giants of San Francisco. Now you got Bay Area people coming to Sacramento because of Republic fans, and there's a lot of talent and money that start to see our city. Yeah. Second, third thing on MLS is, you know, gets the rail yards off the ground.
You bet.
Kaiser's going to be a success story there, but, you know, putting a $250 million stadium builds the rail yards, which is an eyesore. No offense to the community, but the rail yards are damaging the community's reputation, because when you drive by it for 25 years and see it empty, you think the town's not going in the right direction. So the rail yards, I always say the rail yards, since I'm from Ohio and I got a lot of hillbilly in me. So when you live in Ohio, people used to work on their cars in their front yard. And so if you were really doing engine work, you would put your cars on the front yard on blocks for a month. My mother hated that. You know, she would just raise all kinds of heck over that. And we used to joke like, hey, you know, and then somebody try and sell their house and they'd keep their cars on the blocks out front and could never sell their house. The rail yards is like having a car on the blocks in your front yard.
I'm on the investor group of the Republic, and I see things coming together in that group. It's I agree, a huge Republic fan. And obviously, you know, that's an enormous piece of property, right? It's a huge infill property.
And so months on ESPN, you know, I mean, the Kings build our brand. Golden One and the Kings have built our brand up quite a bit. And the experience that the community has going to the Eagles creates energy and civic culture, right? Now you bring in an MLS team and you've doubled the impact of Golden One and the Kings. You throw in Kaiser, right? And now all of a sudden your urban core is no longer something that sets Placer County back, right? So when you build, the reason you build regions, when you think of Detroit, do you think of a positive thing or a negative thing?
First thought is negative.
Right. So when you think of Michigan, what do you think of? You think of Detroit. But yet, you know, Detroit is probably 5% of Michigan's population. And Michigan's more like Montana. It's a beautiful outdoor state. But that's not what people think, because Detroit defines Michigan. So when you're thinking about regions, the city of Sacramento will define the region. So as beautiful as Placer County is, it'll never be able to define itself independent of the city. So if you bring the city up, now Roseville and these other communities have higher profiles. And, you know, Woodland and Davis, all the cities, their profile rises because Sacramento makes amends for its historical position of being a sleepy government city. Right. And now the rail yards, can you imagine, you know, Kaiser under construction, MLS under construction, CIM under construction, you know, redevelopment of Sleep Train. And now you got people driving by that corridor, which, by the way, 12.5 million cars a year. They're going to look over there and say, man, this town's on fire.
Yeah.
And that's going to make it better for Rockland and Lincoln and Woodland and all the communities.
I always say we want to throw a party where people love to come, you know, igniting the entrepreneurial revolution. Mm-hmm. One final question about, like, how to keep people here from going, right? We see businesses leaving California.
Yeah.
We see them even leaving possibly the Bay Area and skipping over Sacramento. A mutual friend of ours with Nivigen Pharmaceuticals, right? These guys have built an incredible company. Sleepy company, nobody knows about them. Super successful. And I know we have talked about how to keep companies like that here in Sacramento.
Do you want to know what I've been doing with that company?
Talk to me.
Okay, so first off, thank you for the referral.
You bet.
So we've been all over these guys. They probably have gotten more attention than they want. But we've been developing a pharmaceutical partnership between that company and California North State in Elk Grove. So one of the proposals on the table for Jay, who's the founder of the company, and it's a cool company with a big upside. We got to make sure we pay attention to those, because those are possibly the future of Sacramento.
You bet.
Keeping those. But, you know, what we did with Jay was, look, you know, all of your drug candidate development, you can do all your commercial partnerships and your pharmaceutical manufacturing partnerships in Elk Grove with California North State. It's a fully accredited medical school and pharmacy school. And it's a proprietary institution, so we don't have to go through regents and Cal State boards and all the complexity. So Alvin Chung, the president of California North State, and Jay have been in conversation for months about, you know, how would we co-invest in Jay's company? How would we build a state-of-the-art manufacturing facility in Elk Grove? And how does the drug development and drug candidates interface between California and North State? So now what we can do, if we pull that off, and, you know, these are long processes, you know, you can now build a pharmaceutical manufacturing corridor in Elk Grove, and guess where they get their research? Oh, Aggie Square. See what I mean? So now you got Aggie Square drugs being spun into Elk Grove to be manufactured. So now no one in Elk Grove sees Aggie Square as, well, this is where I'm going to get jobs, but in fact, Aggie Square is a set of services to the marketplace. Elk Grove in California North State is a set of services to the marketplace. One's a discovery, the other's an applied manufacture, and together you can create a life science pharmaceutical corridor. Now we go into San Francisco and San Diego, connect them all together, and I'm going to call that the California Cure Corridor, and market San Diego, San Francisco, and the Sacramento area nationally and internationally.
Barry Broom sharing his words of wisdom, where he developed his early philosophies, and how he is bringing that to our city, to the hometown we love. Thanks, Barry, for
Thanks for having me.
You bet. All right, now I have the pleasure of bringing on Barry Broom. He is the man behind the Greater Sacramento Economic Council, along with Gary May, the Chancellor of UC Davis. How you guys doing?
Doing awesome.
Ready to do a little sparring here?
Doing good.
No, just kidding. You guys are teammates. Yeah, absolutely. So, Barry, we've been talking to Gary and you as well, and talking about the opportunity that we see here in the region. How would you describe what's happening right now in Sacramento?
Well, I think, you know, the community's turning a corner. And, of course, you know, the chancellor's leadership on Aggie Square is the backbone of it. So for years and years and years, we've had this great research university, and we've sort of, you know, let it sit in an academic comfort zone in Davis. And we've never thought of it as a solution for our economy. You know, we've always been comfortable with the UC Davis graduates leaving town and not staying here. And when you measure the economic impact of capturing UC Davis graduates, commercializing the research, and leveraging the university and corporate partnerships around Aggie Square, that's going to be the foothold that's going to allow us to move away from a government economy to a more advanced tradable sector.
Yeah, obviously huge. Gary, what made you decide to locate it right here in the heart of Sacramento?
Well, you know, this was inspired by my experience in Atlanta at Georgia Tech with Technology Square, which is a partnership between the university, the business community in Atlanta, and the city. I thought we could do something similar here in Sacramento. We needed to have an urban environment, not the college town environment in Davis. And, you know, I was fortunate to get a good partner originally in Daryl Steinberg, the mayor, who I invited to come to Atlanta to take a look at Technology Square. And he brought Barry and a few other business leaders along with him to Atlanta, and we all clicked, and the idea of doing this in Sacramento was compelling, and that kind of got us off started.
What kind of impact did Technology Square have on Atlanta?
It was really transformational. It took a sort of a rundown neighborhood in Atlanta and turned it into a thriving sort of live, learn, work, play ecosystem. It's got housing. It's got retail. It's got certainly the research and the incubators and the innovation activity for the business community, and about 30 companies have co-located with that university and
in that development.
We're hoping for similar success here in Aggie Square.
Well, Barry, you're kind of the analytics guy. You're much more than that. You're like the chief sales guy here for our city. But thinking about the analytics, I mean, how would you measure the impact?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I mean, you know, one of the things that Aggie Square will do is it'll elevate UC Davis's reputation, but take us up with it. And I think a lot of people have underestimated UC Davis. And I really think UC Davis can be the most important public university in the United States. And I think Aggie Square is going to be the catalyst to demonstrate that. But one of the things that when we talk about Measure U, which is this sales tax that we've supported that Daryl Steinberg has led, you know, you need tax base, you need jobs, you need investment near the neighborhoods. So Aggie Square could pay as much as $100 million in taxes at built out to the city of Sacramento. It could also elevate to 27,000 high-wage jobs right in the core of the community. So what that's going to do is, you know, if you want to create inclusion, part of it is you got to have proximity. So what Tech Square did is it took an absolutely totally damaged neighborhood that was crime infested, yeah, drugs, and turned it into, you know, a massive tax generator for Atlanta, but also elevated the entire region. If you go in to C-Tech Square in Atlanta, you would not believe that, you know, 30 years before, it was an area that was completely, it looked more like Detroit 30 years ago, and today it looks more like Times Square meets Silicon Valley.
Wow.
And I think UC Davis and Aggie Square can create the same kind of story for us. It'll change how the venture capital community looks at us. It'll change the technology world. It also really demonstrate, you know, one of the things that makes me really proud to work with UC Davis, and fortunate to have the chancellor on my executive committee, is the use-friendly nature of UC Davis, meaning, you know, the research is friendly to the community. You know, so this isn't going to create gentrification. A lot of people are worried about that. But this is research that's going to, you know, cure cancer. It's going to make farming better. You know, it's going to preserve water. It's going to lower our carbon footprint. You know, it's going to make us better at delivering medical services. So in addition to all these jobs and all this investment, you're actually going to get a public contribution out of Aggie Square that's going to change the lives of people in Sacramento and California and change the lives of people around the world.
Well, we've been talking about teamwork a little bit, right? Obviously, inside this enormous university with all these employees, there's teamwork. What about the teamwork that it takes to pull something like Aggie Square off? Talk to us about what groups of people need to come together, Gary.
Well, as Barry mentioned, I'm a member of his executive committee on GSEC, and certainly those are great partners for us, have been, and we expect them to continue to be partners going forward. But you need the business sector, you need the government sector, and you need the private sector in general, as well as the university and higher ed, to all partner together in this triple helix, some people call it, government, higher ed, and industry, to really make a thriving innovation hub that we expect Aggie Square to be.
Sometimes when I see groups of people come together, whether it be internally inside a business or externally, when you're talking about different organizations coming together, there's teamwork issues, right? There's trust issues. There's people not being committed to the same goal, right? I'm sure you see that when you see a group of people coming together here. What kind of breakdowns are you seeing? How do you overcome some of these basic teamwork issues with these different philosophies, or excuse me, different philosophies probably, but different goals as well?
Well, I think you just have to build trust, and everybody's got to bring something to the table that's relevant. And you look for the win-win-win, right? You don't worry about the things that can detract. You look for ways that everyone can benefit. And I think that's what the strength of our partnership is right now. All sectors expect to benefit and will benefit.
Well, Barry, you mentioned Measure U. Who's against Measure U?
No one.
Perfect. All right. This is going to be too easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So this is not a political show, but I just have to imagine that getting everybody rallied, right? You want to get the taxpayers rallied. You want to bring in the key players. How do you, I mean, you're one of the architects of this entire regional economic development project. How do you bring everybody together?
Well, we've capitalized Measure U. The directors have outside of our organization, so there's no Greater Sacramento money in it because we're a 501c3. But, you know, about 15 of our directors as individuals have put money into Measure U. So it's approaching, you know, quite a bit of money. And we wanted to make sure that Mayor Steinberg understood what we want to do with our political leaders is, if you're going to lead a policy conversation, we'll support you with the resources to help you be successful, as long as you act on evidence and as long as you treat it like investment. Yeah. So the key, you know, let's give Mayor Steinberg a lot of credit, because he's out on the edge on this. And Daryl's been an outstanding mayor. And so from our perspective, you're not going to change the ecosystem. So the Brookings report came out. We shared that globally. And, you know, the economic data in Sacramento has two stories. Top line growth is going to continue to be relatively healthy. But, you know, when it comes to the strategic economic well-being of the community, we still have a decline in small firms, and we have decline in tradable sectors. And some of that's state and regulatory policy of California that's got to be addressed. But a lot of that's because we haven't built these public-private models and drove our universities into the community. And so I see Measure U as not only creating a stable fiscal future for the city of Sacramento, but it's going to create a stable economy for the region. And what's going to happen is, we're going to learn how to do things through Measure U. It's going to be our teachable moment. And once we figure this out, both people at UC Davis will be more excited about commercialization and partnerships, because they'll see how it makes their lives better as faculty researchers. But also, I think you'll see the city of Davis change its view of how to build a research park with UC Davis, because they're going to start to see that, hey, this could be really valuable for us. But inside Davis, we've always let the research park be traffic and housing costs and congestion, and so it's never really gotten traction. But I think with Aggie Square in Sacramento, I think you'll see Davis change its view on its partnerships with the universities. So the whole region will start to elevate because of both those institutional changes.
Well, wondering about geographically, right? You're right there in the heart of Sacramento. I want to contrast it to your experience in Georgia, right? You were in closer proximity to the college there in Georgia. Here you're moving it down the corridor a little bit. Are there extra challenges associated with that?
There'll be some, but I think we've already addressed the transportation issue. We won a grant from Electrify America to put 12 electric buses on a path between back and forth between Davis and Sacramento, and that'll relieve a lot of those issues immediately. And we expect that those buses will be, you know, Wi-Fi enabled and be fairly nice and make that transportation back and forth seamless to the passengers, and people won't even think about it.
Okay, just some closing thoughts about the leadership of Sacramento, beyond Daryl Steinberg, beyond Barry Broom, just the different constituents out there that need to come together in order to make this thing thrive. Closing thoughts, Gary?
Well, beyond those two constituencies, we just need our business partners to jump on board with us, and we've already had some indication from some fairly well-known companies you'd know, but I won't name now, that they would like to co-locate with us in Aggie Square. We're very excited about it.
All right. Barry, same question. What needs to happen? I mean, who needs to come together at this stage? Who are you bringing together?
Well, I'll tell you, there's been great regional leadership on this. So, you know, Placer County leaders have been fantastic. I mean, Roseville, Rockland, Lincoln are really exceptional communities. Folsom, but you know, for years and years, we were very provincial. You know, Placer County kind of did their own thing. Davis stayed over the causeway. The city of Sacramento was, you know, a little bit invisible. You know, Folsom was in a beautiful bubble out there on the river doing a great job. You know, now those walls have come down between those communities and they work together collectively through our organization. And I think whether you're Folsom or Davis or Elk Grove or Placer County, you know, we're all going to benefit by having this research university go to the next level, because the real key thing to our economy is capturing the graduates. And, you know, a college graduate from UC Davis is worth three jobs. Yeah. So if you go, and, you know, we haven't been doing a very good job of that. So if you just capture 1,000 more graduates a year, that translates to 3,000 or 4,000 jobs. And, you know, this is a region that's only producing about 10,000 net new jobs a year. So imagine having a 20, 30, 40% increase in our job performance just by the change in behavior of UC Davis and the change in how the region works together on one front. That doesn't change what we're doing at Sac State with Robert Nelson, who's doing big things, restructuring our workforce programs under Brian King. You know, William Jessup is doing some great stuff, Sierra College, University Pacific, Pam is a fantastic leader. So you now have an ecosystem being governed by the people that lead the assets that can drive it through our board. And all we got to do is sync up, build business plans, run it like it's an investment model, put our head down and get it done.
Barry Broom, Gary May, coming together. I call it the power of with UC Davis, with GSAC, with everybody else that Barry just mentioned that's adding to this leadership effort. Anything is possible, even bringing in the business community as a key, as you mentioned, Gary. Thank you guys for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
You bet. If you like our entrepreneurial stories, if you like the messages that we bring that inspire, if you want a little more Mark Haney, not everybody does, but if you do, feel free to subscribe, feel free to be part of our community, engage, comment, share. I want to get to know you better. You want to get to know me better. Follow me on all our social media platforms at The Mark Haney. I look forward to knowing you better, and let's get to know each other better so we can help build these businesses that we love.